You're listening to
greetings, one and all. Welcome to Sci-Fi Dig Show 341. I am your host, Aaron Makeham, and I'm back. I'm trying very hard to get back on a regular schedule. I've been kind of chomping at the bit to get back to doing some podcasting, but it's been crazy. But usually once September rolls around, we have that Labor Day holiday, and then there's not really many more school days off until Thanksgiving. So that's both good and bad. That's bad because, well, I want to spend as much time with my kid as I can. But that's good because you get into a regular rhythm of how things should be going. With fall coming, there's much less outside time and much more inside time. Outside time as far as chores are concerned. So hopefully I can get some things together and get a little bit more organized. Anyway, with that being said, we're going to discuss Season 2, Episode 1 of Fringe today. And I have a couple other things to discuss. First of all, let's just go ahead and do our upcoming DVD releases. Not a lot in science fiction. Of course, the big thing is on September 10th, if you live in the U.S., Star Trek Into Darkness will be released on multiple formats. There's a ton of different ones. There's a the Blu-ray DVD digital combo. There's the 3D one. There is the one with the phaser from Amazon, which is the one I was going to purchase, but I don't have the cash right now. I really dig that phaser, but I think QMX is the people that are making the phaser, and I do believe they're going to release another one that is actually automatic, and I will think about that. I've decided my collector mentality, which I'm doing a very good job of getting over, I'm going to focus it on more expensive items. That way, I'll only be buying one or two a year and less junk in my house, right? And finer things. But, of course, I say that being back on the comics bandwagon, once again, the paper comics bandwagon. I've never left the comics bandwagon. I've been reading digital, but I can get a better deal on paper. Who knew? It's so weird. The Fly is going to be available on Blu-ray, as well as Marathon Man. And I see as time goes on, we're getting lots and lots of re-releases on Blu-ray. The Talented Mr. Ripley is going to be available as well. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is going to be available. Homeland Season 2, Supernatural Season 8, Castle Season 5, The League Season 4. I love The League. Luther Season 3, I had not realized that 1 and 2 were already released. It's on my Netflix queue to watch, but just have not had time to do that. Let's see what else we have coming up. Dick Tracy box set is going to be available, and Marvel Knights Wolverine versus Hulk is going to be available, and that seems to be about it. We're getting some I don't know if these re-releases or what that are coming out. We have Scanners pack, Scanners 2 and Scanners 3. That was always an interesting movie. I really enjoyed it. I don't know if I want to buy it, but that stuff like that should be on streaming. Jennifer 8 is going to be released on Blu-ray as well. Just a lot of different re-releases, things that have come out that are slowly moving over to Blu-ray that, I'm not really replaced much of anything that I have on DVD already. Friday the 13th, September 13th, we're going to get Crystal Lake Memories, and Friday the 13th box set is going to be available. The complete collection, it's going to be just under $100. And this includes everything, including the, I believe, the remake. It's got 10 discs in it. And, it has the theatrical killer cut. Well, it has both the theatrical and the killer cut of the 2009 film. And it has all eight of the other ones, and then there's a bonus disc as well. So this is getting really mixed reviews, people saying that the other set's the one to buy or whatever. I don't know. I like the Friday the 13th movies. At $94.96, you're paying about $10 a disc, which isn't bad if you have that much money up front, but I think it's, for me, it's going to be rentals. I need to go back and revisit that series at some time. And maybe we'll make a family day of it and do something for Halloween or something. If you live in the UK, you're going to get Iron Man 3 and its various incarnations. The DVD, the region-free Blu-ray, and the Blu-ray 3D and DVD. There's just a bunch of them, okay? It's kind of funny to me that the last couple weeks we're getting, the UK is getting the a lot of the stuff before we are, a week before we are. There is a series being released that I had not heard of, and maybe if anybody out there has watched this can let me know what it's like. It's called The Return. And it's listed as the year is 2013. It's a French show. And series one is being released on DVD in the UK. It sounds interesting. So if anybody has, it's about a town where dead people are returning to town. And it seems like something that I might be interested in watching if there's not a lot of episodes. You know, honestly, as much as I love television, I really am digging the 10 and 13 episode runs of shows. It is, you know, back in the day, you know, I wanted more, but now they do a very good job of writing and winding things up in those 13 episodes, and it seems to me we get some better storytelling, more concise in places where it needs to be, better cuts, trying to get the story together, and I'm really enjoying that. I think that's definitely the way to go, and, you know, I know that a lot of the British shows have been doing that, but the way that they do it is they have a story, they tell it. If it's 5 episodes, great. If it's 10 episodes, great. They just do however many episodes it takes to tell the story. In the U.S., you have a season, and it used to be 22 episodes, and then they've slowly broken that down, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with having a 10 or 13 episode run for a season. I can deal with that. You know, that's all right. Lost Girl Season 2 is going to be available. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Krang Invasion. This is the new Nickelodeon show. I've only seen a couple episodes, but I do enjoy that. Also, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle video game has you can download it for the Xbox 360. I think it's like $15. I downloaded it. I've been playing that. That's kind of fun. Team America is getting a Blu-ray release. Definitely not for the family, but a very funny, very, very funny show. I really enjoy that. Avatar, The Last Airbender, the complete collection is going to be available on DVD. Monty Python's Meaning of Life, 30th Anniversary Edition, is making its Blu-ray debut. I am not seeing any Doctor Who for you guys, so I don't know what's up with that, but I'm looking through here, and I don't really see anything. That seems to be it as far as sci-fi is concerned. Anyhow, the couple things that I wanted to talk about very quickly, and then we'll jump right into Fringe, is, you know, that we have this Star Trek Into Darkness coming up. The DVD release. And I was excited, as I told everybody on this show. It is the very first DVD that I pre-ordered without knowing a release date. Amazon solicited it, and I said, yeah, I'm going to pre-order it because I knew I didn't want to pay more than like $25 for it, which is about the going price of a new DVD. And usually the prices hang on for about 6 months before they start to drop down. But I knew I wasn't going to wait 6 months after released to watch it. I really want to see this again. I really enjoyed it. And I'm of the age now where I don't have enough time to go to a movie 2 and 3 times to see the same film. If I was single, maybe it'd be a different story. But, you know, I go and see it once. And if it's something that's really, really enthralling, then I will definitely work very hard to go back and see it again. But, you know, all of my family have no desire to see a movie twice. They don't understand why I buy DVDs of movies I've already seen. So most of my family have no desire, especially see it twice within like, you know, a 2 or 3 week period. So, of course, I didn't get to go see it again. And that's good because I've had time to think about it. I know a lot of people like to go see it, and then the second time they start noticing things. But for me, I let it sink in and really think about it. And I've been reading a lot of the criticisms and things like that. And, you know, I came out and when I first saw it and said, hey, you know, I really like this movie and I don't really care what the haters are saying. It seemed to me that a lot of the haters, again, this is my opinion. You know, it seemed to me that a lot of the people that were complaining, maybe I shouldn't call them haters. That might be a little strong. But a lot of people that didn't like the film were basically complaining about the rebooted universe. And so to me, that's not something that I'm going to really, you know, agree with, because that's the nature of the film, right? You know, I mean, that's like complaining about a science fiction movie set in space and say, well, it's set in space. It's that's the nature of the film. You knew that going in. Why'd you even go see the movie? It makes no sense to me. You know, if you were going to hate on it one way or the other, that seemed to be a lot of complaints were. And I don't want to get into any spoilers. I know everything's been spoiled to death now, but I don't want to get into it on this show right now. After I get the DVD, I probably will be doing an in-depth discussion about it. Hopefully I can find somebody out there who wants to discuss it, who didn't like the film, or can take the side, devil's advocate, and take the side of why things, you know, were not as great as they should have been or whatever. But at any rate, I pre-ordered it. I can't wait to sit down and see it again. I'm very excited to watch. It's going to be a little mini event in my day when the DVD comes. Well, then Paramount announced that they were going to do this brilliant maneuver where they were going to release different DVDs to different places and put different extras on there, so you're never going to get all the extras. If you wanted a commentary track, you had to buy it from iTunes and download the 5 GB file. Now, the DVD that I'm buying comes with a digital download. Now, I don't know if that's the iTunes download or not. If that's the case, then maybe I will download that for the commentary track. I don't really care that much about the commentary track. The 5 GB is a big problem for me because I have DSL. That's going to take all night and probably into the next day to really grab it all. And I don't want that sitting on my computer. What am I supposed to do with that? You know, I mean, it's just a huge file, and I don't really, it's taking up a lot of space. Now, if this was Pacific Rim, which is the other DVD that I pre-ordered without knowing a release date, if this was Pacific Rim, that'd be a different thing because I'm real interested in how they put all that together. The more extras I get on that, the better. I think that's going to be like an all-week watch for me if they put all the stuff in there and if they make a director's cut like they said they were going to. But Paramount's move for this multiple thing, my problem with it isn't the fact that they're spreading it around. I mean, that's stupid. I'm sorry. That's a stupid move. That's like buying an omnibus, and depending on what store you get it at, you're going to get different content in the book. That doesn't make any sense. That's stupid. You know, usually, you know, you can get like a bonus disc if you buy at certain places. Or a prime example, I think the one that really did work, and again, not science fiction related, but when Kiss did the Kiss collection, they had the three different DVD sets of the different eras of Kiss. The way they did it, depending on where you bought it, you got a bonus. Everybody got a bonus disc. No matter where you got a bonus concert disc. But depending on where you bought it, you got a different disc of a different show. And that's the way to do it because everybody's getting something. And, you know, that's not, it's a show. It's not that big of a deal, right? But, you know, excluding commentary track is just, it's stupid. And the thing that really, to me, that really makes it stupid is people want a definitive disc. So a lot of people out there who have been buying Blu-rays and buying this stuff up for some time realize, hey, I'm just going to wait until they release a definitive set, which I figure is going to be something like both movies together and with all the extras, you know, maybe around Christmas time, maybe sometime next year, there's going to be some kind of box set deal that they're going to do. And for me, I'm just like, well, you know, I'm getting the movie for, I think it's like $19 on Amazon. I want to see it, so I have no problem making the purchase, knowing that there's not going to be any extras or there's not going to be very many of them. It's still a stupid move. You're really pissing the fans off. I thought about canceling my order, and then I realized that, well, if I cancel my order, I'm not going to be able to see the film. So, and I really am kind of want to see it, you know, but I'm looking at it from the people that went to the theater and they all complained. Now, keep in mind that we live, you know, this whole entire summer has been the summer of fanboy rage. Okay. Everything that's come out, people have complained about things that haven't even happened yet. People are complaining about, it's crazy. Somebody casts somebody in a movie and everybody goes off the rails about it. And it was like that with every single movie that came out this summer. Everybody complained before, during, and after the film. If that's the case, and if, you know, if it isn't fanboy rage is when somebody will stir and complain for days about a film, but as soon as it comes out on Blu-ray, they run to the store and buy it. Okay. Well, that's not really showing, you're not putting your money where your mouth is there. But if this is just like regular people who haven't liked the film and say, I'm not going to buy this. Well, if they were thinking about buying it, they're certainly not going to buy it now that all the extras, they're confused about what's going to be where, you know, what extras they want to get. And I think it's really going to make the DVD sales in this take a hit. Now, I'm not saying they're going to dive. I'm not going to say it's not going to be in the top 10. I'm just saying they're going to take a hit on this. And it just doesn't seem to be the smartest move. But I'm not running a studio. What do I know? I'm just saying that for me, I want to see the movie. I'm going to buy it. But if there is some definitive collection out there and has some great extras, then I'll think about it. But honestly, I think what's going to happen is that anybody out there who has bought the DVD who wants an extra, they're just going to go to the torrent sites, find it, and download it. That's what's going to happen. And then they'll be saying, oh, well, pirating is what's ruining our business. No, nobody's going to go and buy four different versions of this movie at, $25 a pop. They're not going to do that. It doesn't make any sense. Okay, I'm done giving my two cents on that, and I welcome any feedback you might have on that topic. You feel free to send it my way, scifidig@gmail.com. You can send me text, you can send me, or emails. You can follow me on Twitter and send me stuff there, or on Facebook, or the Google Plus group, or you can just send me an audio file. Feel free to do that. The other thing is Ender's Game. Ender's Game, the movie, comes out in on November 1st, and it has some big movie stars attached to it. Of course, a lot of the problems with the movie so far is some of the trailers kind of spoil the ending, and some in the trailers, and it doesn't really it doesn't have the same impact as when you read the book. Now, I have read part of the Ender's Game saga at some point in my life, but it wasn't until last year that I actually read Ender's Game and the two books following that. And I want to keep on reading it. I'm gonna. I'm enjoying. Probably the stuff that people hate is probably some of the things that I'm enjoying about it. Just very unique in a lot of ways. But here's the thing: everybody's complaining about, Orson Scott Card and some of the things that he has said. Now, I'm not going to get into his politics, okay? And you can debate whether it's politics or not, but it's what he believes. His belief system is it might be different than yours. And I'm not, I just, I'm gonna avoid that. Okay. I'm just saying, some people say he's spewing hate, I don't know. I'm not gonna keep my opinion to myself about all that. But here's the thing. They're all talking about boycotting the movie. And, if that's what you want to do, more power to you, but it doesn't make a lot of sense to me to boycott a movie because you want to punish him and he's already made his money. Okay. He already optioned this, probably a year ago, 2 years ago, 10 years ago, who knows? I'm not exactly sure when they optioned it, but it's not like he's going to get a bigger payout. He's already made his money. I mean, I'm pretty sure when you option something, you're not going to get a bigger payout if the movie does well. So by boycotting the movie, the only people you're hurting are the people who took the time to act and do stuff in this. And it is, I don't know much about the actors' politics that are in this film. I don't know if they donate to political causes. I don't know if they donate to, organizations, but they could. So the organization that's boycotting this very well could be hurting the person that's in this film that might actually contribute money or be vocal for your cause. And it doesn't, I understand the rage. I understand people wanting to do something, and I fully understand boycotts, and I do think that in a lot of ways they can be they can work. They can do a good job of sending a message and communicating what you want to communicate. But it just doesn't make any sense to me to boycott a film where the person you're trying to punish has already made their money from it. Okay, it's already been optioned. The screenplay has already been written. The movie's already been made, and Orson Scott Card's already got his money. It's already in the bank. It's probably already spent at this point. So when you boycott this, it's not. It's for, the couple things are going to happen. First of all, if in fact people do boycott it, because people talk a lot, but they don't actually follow through. If people are going to boycott this, well, then the movie's going to do bad, and a lot of the actors might be getting paid out the paid at the end of it. Depending on they might get all their money on the back end, in which case they're not going to make money. The other thing is that we're not going to get any sequels or any more films like this, because it's gonna if it dives, then it's if it's not making the money that the studio wants, well, then we're not going to get any sequels. And as sci-fi fans, obviously, we would like to see some of the other books made. But again, I'm not exactly sure what's optioned. If the idea is that well, the other books haven't been optioned yet, and we don't want them to be optioned, and then you boycott this. Well, then, yeah, but you're also hurting the other people involved with it. So I'm not sure exactly how efficient that would be. Now, I'm not saying you should boycott, you shouldn't boycott it. I'm just saying that I see a lot of this stuff, happen. And again, there's been so much rage this summer over films, and it's in a lot of ways. It kind of makes me chuckle a little bit because there's other things going on in the world that you could direct your energy towards, and it seems as though, instead of trying to direct your energy toward your community or your family or and anything around you, your town, helping out, doing things like that, we're going to spend time making making petitions to not let Ben Affleck play Batman or whatever, which is just stupid in my book. But anyway, that's just, not really a rant or anything. I'm just saying, and I'm not trying to, again, I'm not making this political. I don't care what somebody's views are, but the point is in this case, he's already been paid. There's no way you're going to boycott it and they're going to go and take that money back from him. That's not going to happen. So it just seems kind of silly to boycott something that, that's already been done. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Now, with that being said, obviously there was a lot of fire about some of the comics he was doing, and that ended up falling through for him. And that's the way to do it. You're just if you're boycotting a current project, if he brings out a new book and you want to boycott that, knock yourself out. If you're not sure what I'm talking about, just look up Google Orson Scott Card and some of his statements, and you may agree, you may disagree. The thing is that at the end of the day, we do live in America, and you do have freedom of speech, even if it's something you don't agree with. I don't want to use the word stupid here because I don't want to say somebody's opinion is stupid. But I would just say that you do have the freedom of speech to say what you want, and if it makes you kind of look like a crazy idiot, well then hey, that. That's that's what you said, that there's nothing you can really do about that. And apparently on more than one occasion, Card has said something. He said something once, and then people were all ticked off about it, and then you'd think that he would be done, and he would, when you make your living by selling a product of your imagination, you're selling stories to people, okay? Maybe you don't want to anger the public that'll be buying those stories because it just doesn't seem very good business, But not only did he say something once, but then he had to go and say something again. It's like, dude, this is your living. Just stop talking about it, okay? It doesn't really, it's not making you any more money, and it's just not, I don't know. It was bizarre to me. Anyway, I'm getting into the politics part. I didn't want to do that. I'm just saying that it is, the boycott, maybe not the best idea. Anyway, with that being said, let's talk some fringe. Hey, welcome to season two. This is the first episode of season two. It originally aired on September 17th, 2009. The title is A New Day in the Old Town. And if you remember the last episode, Olivia crossed over. And I don't really know. It's kind of unclear to me if people consider her missing or not. Peter's birthday is coming up, and Walter is trying to make plans to celebrate it. And we are going to be introduced to our first characters from the other universe, the shapeshifters. Now, I inadvertently said that there was a shapeshifter in the last episode when I talked about there being a car crash in the very beginning. It ends up there's a car crash, and we see a guy getting out of the car, and he's messed up a little bit, and he wanders off into a building, and he does this deal where he puts something in his mouth, and we're not quite sure what's going on. Yeah, I watched the two episodes back to back and got a little bit confused because I was running out of time. I had to get to work. I was trying to get all the audio pulled at one time, so I apologize for that. This is where that takes place. That's our first scene. And our second scene is of Peter and Walter in the grocery store as Walter is talking about what he wants to make for Peter's birthday.
Walter, come on. I don't need you to make me anything.
I insist. You know, there's something you don't know about me, son.
What's that? That once you enter a grocery store, you never leave again? Ever?
Before I became chair of biochemistry at Harvard, which was after Oxford and MIT, I was sous chef at the Bakersfield Food Lab.
Sous chef?
Well, technically, I worked under Seymour Brodie.
Am I supposed to know who that is?
He invented the ho-ho.
Of course he did. Walter, I want to leave this place, and I don't need you to make me a cake.
I'm not making you a cake, I'm making you a custard. It's my specialty.
I don't like custard. In fact, I've never liked custard.
As a boy, you loved it. You've just forgotten. Friday is your birthday. You deserve something wonderful.
Well, for my birthday, can I have getting the hell out of here?
You need to celebrate and make sure that Agent Dunham can attend. I want to see her face when she eats my pudding.
That's disturbing.
Peter Bishop. What?
Now, that was the call saying that they found Olivia's SUV and she wasn't in it, and there's some suspicion around what's happening. As we're going to hear in the clip, that, you know, the seatbelt's still buckled, the airbags haven't gone off or anything. You know, where could the person be, etc. And everything's going to tie together here in a minute. We are introduced to a new character, Agent Jessup. And it's kind of, I'm not exactly sure what went on here, and I didn't do a lot of research, but man, the way they play this out, it's almost as though she's going to replace Olivia, the way that they play this character. I'm not sure what the plans were for this character. I do know that she doesn't continue very much, but it's a great character, and I think they needed somebody for Peter to play off of as well. And she's very open-minded about what the Fringe Division is doing. The next clip contains my favorite scene in Fringe, period. End of story. I love this scene. At the time, it scared the crap out of me and when it happened. And it just has always, always stuck in my head. But let me play the clip, and then I will get to, you know, what I liked about this.
Mr. Bishop?
Yeah.
Agent Jessup, hi.
Hi. This is my father, Walter.
Yes. I have a couple questions for you.
How bad is she?
We don't know.
Excuse me?
How do you not know?
Can you just explain exactly what you do? You're some sort of special consultant.
Where's Charlie?
I'm sorry, Charlie who?
Agent Charlie Francis, where is he?
Yeah, I believe he's on route from Quantico. I'm the agent in charge.
Well, agent in charge, where is Olivia Dunham?
Witnesses report that after the crash, a man was seen leaving the car on foot, but no one saw anyone leave the SUV. The doors are still locked. The seatbelt still buckled, the airbags deployed, but there's no indentation, which implies no one was behind the wheel at the moment of impact.
Did you check to make sure these skid marks match the other vehicle?
Look, you still haven't told me what it is you do. You, Agent Dunham, your father. I checked with the field office. He said that all of your work is
classified. And that you don't have access. I don't have time for this.
It's not that I don't appreciate petulance, Mr. Bishop. But the sooner you cooperate,
I would love to cooperate. As soon as you can find me an agent who can actually help me.
So I kind of need to describe what happened there. The whole time that Peter and Jessup are arguing, Walter is examining the car. He gets inside. He's looking around. Suddenly, the car starts, you know, starting and things are going crazy electronically. So he gets out of the car because he doesn't know what's happening. Well, he backs up and they're all looking at the car as the car alarm goes off and everything. And suddenly, Olivia Dunham flies through the windshield and lands on the ground. And of course, you know, when I saw it, it scared the crap. I mean, the second, third, and fourth time I saw it, I just kept wondering, how in the heck did they do this? I want to see. This is a big stunt for television. There better be some footage. And sure enough, if you get the Fringe DVDs, they do have the stunt woman, and they show how they did this, which basically they have a breakaway windshield, and they have a launcher in the back of the car. They put the seats down and everything. You know, they're gone, and the stunt woman crouches down in this thing. It's like she puts her feet on this platform and it shoots her. I think it's controlled by air, and it shoots her through the windshield. This is a fantastic scene. And And, you know, at some point in time, I'm not exactly sure. Oh, I know. As time goes on and she starts to remember, because she can't remember what happened. And this isn't really a spoiler, but she does remember some of the final things she said to William Bell. And he says, oh, and I have to apologize. And she's like, why? And he's like, physics are a bitch. And so then that's when she goes back. She crosses back and then she ends up going through the windshield. And obviously, it wasn't until the second or third time I watched this that I tied the almost car wreck in the last episode into this. So what happened is we're going to find out there. It's a shapeshifter. He tried to take her out. She swerved a miss. And, for whatever reason, that moment is, I can't decide if she kind of crossed over at some point, you know, then or what exactly happened. But for whatever reason, that moment is coming back in this point in time. I'm confused as to why it's happening, but they are connected. Now, the next clip I have is of Broyles meeting with Jessup, and she's coming into the office or whatever, and it's nighttime, and he meets her on the steps, and he tells her that the report has already been filled out for her.
Amy Jessup. Special Agent Broyles. We need to talk about what happened at the crime scene.
Sir,
what happened, Junior Agent, is all right here in the report. A random traffic accident involving a federal agent. No extenuating circumstances. Case closed. Sign it, please.
But this girl...
Sign the report, Agent. That's an order.
Okay, now I love this episode, and there's a lot going on here, and I'm trying the best I can here because there's just it's not that it's confusing when you watch it, it all makes sense, but me talking about it, I'm trying to connect the dots here, and also I have some issues with this episode. My biggest issue is the next clip. You know what? Let me play the clip, and then I'll explain why I have a problem with what they did with this issue because it with this episode. Sorry, too many comic books. With this episode, I'll get into it. Let me play the clip first. And this is of Peter and Walter in the hospital, and Walter's trying to get something out of the vending machine, and Olivia's doctor comes out to talk to them.
I'm afraid your friend's injuries were too severe.
Oh, come on.
We were unable to restore any brain function.
Patients who suffer this kind of head trauma simply don't regain consciousness.
Simple. Reductive. Absurd. Life and death, these are relative terms. Contextually defined, dependent on cultural specifics.
Walter.
And is undoubtedly indulging in primitive diagnostics. Agent Dunham is not dead.
She's not dead.
She's not dead.
Walter.
She's not.
Walter! Walter, wait! Stop!
You can't go back there.
Please, back off.
Now we have this scene where the doctor tells, two of the key members that Olivia is dead. And we also, before this, we have the introduction of, you know, the new female character, Agent Jessup. Now I haven't been able to find any information about there being any sort of contract negotiations or any kind of problems going on where they might have had to write Olivia out. And so in absence of that, unless I'm completely wrong, and if anybody knows any information, feel free to send me an email or an audio file. But it seems as though they're playing to the audience that, oh, we're going to kill this character and we're going to replace her and we already have all this set up and yada, yada, yada. Because that's exactly what it looks like. This is exactly how you would replace a key character who, for whatever reason, didn't want to continue a series or, you know, they died or something like that, you know. I didn't like it. I didn't think for one second that they were going to replace Olivia, and I felt as though they were kind of forcing the Jessup character on us. I like the character. I like the friction that her and Peter have in the beginning. I like the fact that she doesn't have like having her toes stepped on by a consultant, and you know I did enjoy that. But in the back of my mind, I kept thinking they're trying to make us think that Olivia is not going to come back. And let's face it, in this show, life and death, not that big of a deal, right? I mean, they've been able to do certain things to reanimate bodies or whatever. And also, you have this scene, and they lead us to believe that Olivia's dead. And that's kind of what it comes down to. But she's not. She's just kind of in a coma with little brain activity. So that could go anywhere. And I just did not like the way they kind of clumped all that together. They left out a lot of stuff that we needed to know. But with that being said, you need to look past that. You know, I'm just forewarning you that I felt that that was really garbled and not well done. And I thought that was just lazy, lazy writing. There was no need for it in this episode. I do not like it. I don't like what they did there. I'm not sure what they were trying to do. Maybe if I had a better understanding, I wouldn't be, you know, bashing on the writers who did this bit. But I just felt that it was stupid and unnecessary in this particular episode. See, there's stuff about Fringe I don't like. There's times when I get fired up over stuff. Anyway, this next scene, I really dug this scene because this is going to kind of set things up for what is going to happen from now on, you know, what the Fringe team is going to do. Let me play the clip. This is of Peter drinking in the bar, and Broyles comes in, and they have a drink together, and they're talking about Olivia.
You mind if I join you?
I'm guessing you don't drink.
Double.
How did you find me?
I work for the FBI. Where's your father?
My father is off in La La Land. Mixed himself up a really nice cocktail. Valium, Haldol, Secanol, and I think Lorazepam. Astrid is babysitting.
I've been called to Washington tomorrow. The efficacy of the division is being questioned. I've been informed that our failure to deliver any usable results is unacceptable.
They're shutting you down? What were we even doing anyway? We'd sit around and wait for somebody to die some grisly, macabre death, or for the entire fabric of the universe to come shredding apart. We were the cleanup crew, sent in to mop it up to make sure it was all neat and tidy for the file. Well, it's too late anyway.
That's not entirely true.
We were too late for Olivia.
To Agent Dunham.
To Agent Dunham.
Now, what we find out, you know, as far as the death of Dunham, is that, you know, Olivia's sister is in town and, you know, her niece is not there and Peter goes to the hospital and she is there and they have a conversation. And basically, you know, what she tells him, and again, this is touching back to Olivia's family, you know, her sister and whatnot. And like I said, they're slowly going to fade to the background. But what she tells him is that tomorrow they're going to turn off the machines and she's been sitting with her or whatever. And the idea is that they turn off the machines and then Olivia's going to die. And, you know, it's up and this is like the first kind of point in time where they mention that, right? Because we don't really know that, you know, the doctors be like, oh, you know, she's dead, you know, she's not going to make it, whatever. So Peter goes in and he goes in and he's, you know, looking at Olivia on the bed and, you know, he's trying to find it in his heart to say goodbye. And this is what happens. So that happens, and then Peter has a freaking heart attack and dies, and the show's over. No, but I could have done without the screaming at the end. Kind of scared me a little bit. wasn't ready for that. Startled me. Didn't like it. Anyway, so now, you know, obviously Olivia's awake, and she is all kinds of messed up. Right? She can't. She's having trouble focusing. She's, you know, she cannot remember what has happened. She just knows that she's frightened. She as the episode goes on, we're going to find out that she has a lot of problems. She can't even load her gun, you know, for whatever reason she's having post-traumatic stress or whatever. And that's going to play out as season two goes on, her trying to overcome what has happened to her in this accident. So the next clip is her in the hospital, and they're asking her questions. And she's kind of frantic. She's trying to explain to Peter that she crossed over. She was somewhere else, basically.
Can you tell me your name?
It's Olivia Dunham.
Do you know the year?
Why am I in the hospital, and what is wrong with my leg?
You were in an accident, do you remember, in New York?
Is Peter here? I need to see
him. He's here.
I went somewhere.
I know. You went to New York.
No. Yeah, but... No.
Olivia, look, you were in an accident.
No. No. I was trying to get somewhere, and someone was trying to stop me, but I went there anyway, and... Oh, God, what is happening?
Mr. Bishop, please. She needs to stay calm.
You told me something. I don't know, I can't remember, but... Oh, it was very important. There's something that I have to do.
Who, Olivia? Who told you to do what?
I don't know, but there's something that I have to do, and what? I think that our lives may depend on it.
Whose lives?
Everyone's.
That beta blocker, get her pulse down.
No, Peter, I need my gun. Please, I'm not safe. Somebody hurt me. They did this to me. Please, Peter, my gun. I need my gun. Please, Peter.
Now, of course, Peter is visibly shaken by all this because, I mean, she's freaking out and she's normally very strong. He doesn't know, what to do. So he goes back to the FBI offices. I call them the FBI offices. I don't even know what building they're in. I just call them the offices, so you know what I'm talking about, right? I'm not real good with pinpointing locations. I mean, you read some of the breakdowns of Fringe and people have like maps out and they're pinning stuff saying, well, there's no way that this could be close to this, even though they say it is, yada, yada, yada. And I understand that some people are obsessive about that. I don't care. Just tell me the story. But hey, more power to them. Whatever makes you happy, man. I know sometimes picking shows apart is half the fun, but anyway. So he goes to the offices, and keep in mind that they are trying to shut down the Fringe division. They don't know what's going on. Congress doesn't know where the money's going and all that stuff. They haven't been able to prove anything. And this is all tying together because, at this point in time, what Peter said was correct. They have been reacting to everything. And the idea is to make everything look good in a report so that people can read it and believe it, as opposed to what is really happening and them trying to make and be more on the offensive, which is obviously much harder to do because people have plans and you're not privy to those plans or whatever. But I like that. I like the fact that, and I said this before, one of the things about Fringe that sells it to me is every season they're kind of reinvented a little bit. They have the same core of what makes the show good, but the objectives slowly change, and I really like that. The objective has always been to stop the bad guys and stop this craziness from happening. But as the seasons go on, that gets narrower as to who's causing the problems or what exactly they need to stop. And this is the first season where we see them going on the offensive, and we're going to see that a little bit more and more as the episodes progress. So many things change, like one of the things I liked in season one was the ability when there was a crime to see them use their detective skills and the things that they learned as FBI agents to track things down. And not that we don't see that, but I think in season one, really, it was really, they really make a point of showing that, and I really enjoy that, because it's procedural. And at the end of the day, it is procedural. I mean, that's what we're doing here. Anyway, so Peter goes and they tell them that the credentials aren't good because, obviously the Fringe division is being, under investigation, is going to be shut down or whatever. And there are a bunch of agents in the lobby, and security tries to escort Peter out. And he, of course, is able to break free of the guy's grip. And Agent Jessup is there, and she kind of saves the day, so to speak.
Then Agent Francis, please. Charlie Francis.
Sir, what is this regarding?
I work for you guys. I'm a consultant. I need access to a file on a car accident yesterday in New York City.
I'm sorry. These credentials have been revoked, Mr. Bishop.
What? Look, lady, You need to help me.
Please feel free to file a civilian request on our website.
No, listen to me. One of your agents is in the hospital, and her life and possibly yours depends on the work that I need to do. So you find me somebody who can help me.
Okay, sir. You can exit the building.
I'll take him.
I'm with her.
What are you doing in Boston?
You like to fight, Mr. Bishop? All that time in Iraq, mob connections. You've got quite a combative history.
Look, you said you were going to help me get my hands on that file.
It's on the seat behind you.
What?
Something wasn't adding up about those skid marks. They were darkest in the back, not the front.
So maximum torque, farthest away from the incident. That means the driver wasn't slowing down.
He was speeding up.
He must have been waiting.
Those are pictures from the surveillance camera in the parking structure adjacent to the accident site. George Reed, 524 Littlefield Road, here, in Lexington. We're 15 minutes away. All right, now it's your turn. What's the fringe division? What do you people do?
Nothing. Not anymore.
FBI! George Reed?
That would be her and with Peter along for the ride, breaking into George Reed's home because they see him leaving the scene of the accident in the photos, and he's dead, and so there's no way that he could have been the person that was, after Olivia. And so when they find him, he says, I need somebody to pick somebody up for me. And so, of course, his dad, comes in. Walter shows up, and he's examining the body, and that's where I play this clip. I'm laughing because the very first moment of this clip, you just kind of shake your head.
Feel his anus. It's soaking wet. Expansion of the oral mucosa, the eyes, and the rectum to accommodate rapid fluid loss. The virus, it obviously doesn't affect birds or people, at least not quickly. Agent, I need this body taken back to my lab.
Hey, lunatic, this body is going to the morgue. Is he crazy?
Peter?
Who is the agent in charge here?
I am. Take it wherever he wants.
Lovely.
Is he crazy?
Oh, yeah.
Whatever fringe division is or was, FBI says it's been shut down. And yet I just sent you a body.
Which does beg the question, why are you doing this?
Following the case.
It doesn't pay to bluff a bluffer, Agent Jessup. You know, a lot of people would be scared by this. Most, actually.
There are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt
of. Oh, wow. Really? Butchered Shakespeare.
Peter! They said I can write in the back of the body.
Can I? Sure. Of course you can. Stay out of the medications, though. Please.
I think I've been waiting for you people my whole life.
Some great Walter stuff, I'm glad, because last episode was kind of heavy, and we didn't have enough little clips of Walter and his little, the joy on his face when he's saying, they say I can ride in the back with the body. Again, I'm just going to mention this, periodically every episode. The fact that John Noble doesn't have an episode an Emmy for every episode of this season is ridiculous. I mean, I know that John has done some other work in the past. And although, what I've seen of it, I've always enjoyed. This is just outstanding. I mean, the way how he performs in this series is just outstanding. Just a phenomenal character. And I know that the writers write the character, but man, he sure does bring this character to life. Just a great, great job. Anyway, the next clip I have is kind of an important clip, and it's a man coming into a pawn shop, and I'm going to play the clip, and there's a typewriter involved here. In a back room, and I will explain all this to you and as soon as I play the clip.
I'll be with you in just a minute.
So,
what can I do you for?
I'm looking for a Selectric. It's Selectric 251.
It doesn't exist. They never made one. It's a 245 straight to 255.
I'm still going to need the 251.
You one of them? No, it's been 6 years. I just kind of figured that... Straight back. Last door. Hey. You tell him I'm not waiting around forever.
Okay, so basically they go into a back room where there's a desk and a typewriter and a mirror. And the mirror is pointed at the typewriter. And as they type, they are able to use the mirror's communication to communicate back and forth. And we're assuming this is with the other universe. Basically what happens during this conversation, you know, via typewriter, is that, you know, the person entering says that the target has been stopped and, you know, and that, you know, the meeting, they were able to stop the meeting. The meeting did not occur. And what ends up happening is he gets, it types back to him saying that the target is alive. The meeting did occur. And he is, the new orders are to interrogate and kill the target. Obviously, the target is Olivia, and this is the shapeshifter. We're going to see more of these as the series progresses. And, you know, I'm not altogether, you know, I'm trying to remember, but I don't think that they really made up straight rules for how the shapeshifters are supposed to work. And it just seems that as time goes on, it kind of varies a little bit. I could be wrong about that, but I'm trying to remember everything that happens. But anyway, that's what, and this is important because this typewriter plays out in a lot of the episodes. This is how they're communicating between the alternate universe. And what happens next is that Jessup is going with Peter to see Walter's lab. And I'm just going to play the clip because it's, you know, obviously my favorite part of this whole clip is when she looks over and there's a cow.
Worse. And some good, too. It's complicated. But for right now, all you really need to know is that this building is where he used to work. He was working here as a professor. Simultaneously, he was working on a number of top secret government projects. We do our thing down here in the lab because, according to him, it's the only place that he can work. You're coming up on your last chance to turn back.
Are you kidding?
Agent Jessup? Welcome to Fringe Division. Astrid. Amy. Astrid. Nice haircut.
Thanks. Hi. Hello.
Oh, hello. Again. I need 4 Bunsen burners, 8 metal bowls, yay big, and a freezer.
Do the bowls need to be sterilized?
It's not for the autopsy. It's for the custard for Peter's birthday.
Walter, will you forget about the custard?
I refuse. Also, rib cutters, toothed forceps, and a bone saw for the autopsy, not for the groceries.
All right, now we have a few things going on here. First of all, Broyles is in front of a Senate subcommittee where they're discussing Fringe, and I like Broyles. Again, you know, we don't get enough of Broyles doing the red tape thing, I like to call it, you know, doing the political work that he needs to do in order to keep the Fringe up and running. You know, obviously he's a good agent, but I think that, you know, his idea, you know, as you watch him, you realize his game plan is to hand this information to the other agents, let them do their thing, and he tries to run interference on everything. But he's not like one of those stuff shirts, you know, pencil pusher kind of guys. He, you know, obviously he's a person of, you know, high moral fiber and is trying to do the right thing. So I'm going to play that clip here in a minute, and I love it because I just love Broyles, and I love when he's being tough, and I'm really digging that. The other thing we find out is that the shapeshifters are able to the way they're able to change is there's a plate they put in the top of their soft palate, and that enables them to change and look like somebody else. And it's the same one that's slowly moving around and trying to eliminate Olivia. So you know, we have that going as well. And we're, like I said, we're going to deal with episodes where we're going to have more of the shapeshifters. But let me play the clip of Broyles because this is some great stuff. And one other clip that I did, I was going to include it, and then I decided not to. I thought that you should watch the episode for it because Charlie doesn't get enough screen time. And there's this whole deal where he goes and he's talking to Olivia and she's saying he's fine. He explains to her a story of his past when he was a cop. And, you know, he thought he was fine too, you know, that what happened was there was a domestic abuse call and he was arresting the guy. In the meantime, the woman had killed his partner and shot Charlie in the chest. And he said he was fine too. And at the end of it, he says, if you're like me, he's like, you have a gun under your pillow right now. And she pulls out the gun and she's like, I can't even load it, you know. And she's, like I said, Olivia's kind of a mess, not only physically, but she's just mentally frazzled, you know. And I think that we're supposed to assume, you know, at first I thought it was because she was frustrated because of the way her mind works and she couldn't remember what she was supposed to do. But I'm wondering if maybe shifting back and forth through universes, however they did it, maybe that helped to rattle her a little bit. But anyhow, that's what's happening so far in the episode. I didn't want to pull all those clips, you know, especially the Charlie Francis clip. I highly recommend going and watching that clip because it was just really well done. But this whole deal with Broyles and the senators, it cracks me up.
Unsubstantiated claims of invasion. Reports of technology run amok. The old X designation and your fringe investigations have been indulgences in the federal budget for over half a century. Well, the salad days are over, Mr. Broyles.
Colonel.
Excuse me?
Or special agent, as you'd prefer, Senator.
Colonel Broyles. Philip, listen. We all have a job here, and we...
Yes, Senator, I have a job. The same job I have had in 3 administrations and 6 wars to defend our national security. And I assure you, we are not secure. Yes, sometimes the threat is familiar. But I have come to learn that sometimes it is far worse. And when it is worse, when the threat is unimaginable, that is when we are at the door. And you should thank God for that.
Philip, without something usable, something to support the human and fiscal cost, I'm sorry.
Now, the next clip I have has a lot of action in it, and so it might not be the best for audio, but you need to understand that the shapeshifter has shifted into the form of the nurse who is taking care of Olivia. And she comes into the room and is interrogating her, asking her questions. And at one point, she gets really excited and is like, you know, so, you know, and she's kind of dropped any kind of... I don't know. I think Olivia should have recognized. You'll hear it at the end where she's like, and so you don't know where it is. Where is it? Where is it? You know, and it just kind of seems as though Olivia should have picked up on that, and she didn't. And so, again, I you know, just say that it's part of the condition Olivia is in right now. But anyway, let me just play the clip. And, you know, at the end of the clip, the shapeshifter jumps out of the hospital window. And, you know, it's a nice scene, nice shot. She jumps down like several different drops. I'm not sure what floor Olivia is on, but it's high up.
You're looking better.
Thank you. I'm starting to feel a little bit more like me.
So how's your memory?
Still all just fragments. I remember going to New York. I remember driving, but I can't seem to see anything past that.
Happens with head injuries. People can lose days before an accident. The best thing to do is just to keep trying, Olivia.
I was on my way somewhere to meet with someone, and I guess someone hit my car. But it doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's as if I went somewhere and talked to someone and then came back to the accident.
Do you remember who you were going to meet with?
No. lost. He told me something.
What? Go on.
I can't,
Try.
Something's hidden.
Yes. Where?
I can't.
Where is it hidden?
I can't remember.
It's really all you know then, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Suspect entering the lobby.
Olivia's room?
The floor is locked up 6 ways from Sunday. The only person allowed in is a nurse.
Don't fight it, it's over.
Agent Francis, suspect is now white female, black hair, scrubs, gray sweater. She's jumped down to the loading dock, but she's heading into the basement.
You okay?
Go get that bitch.
Now that's the Olivia that I know. Anyway, the person that shot the shapeshifter in the back as she was trying to strangle the life out of Olivia because Olivia dropped her gun was Jessup. And so they, you know, what happens is they chase the shapeshifter down to the basement. Charlie's down there and they arrive and he is shot and killed the nurse. And, well, the shapeshifter in nurse form. And so that's kind of that. The next scene is between Peter and Olivia, and they are having, they're just talking, trying to, I think it's kind of for us, the viewer, kind of laying down what has happened in this episode. Like I said, it's a very busy episode. A lot of things are going on here. And so, it's a great moment, a relationship moment between the two of them, because obviously, you know, a lot has happened. And what I like about these characters is the fact that their relationship has been grown organically. It wasn't forced on us, and it really does work. And this is one of those moments where you see growth in a relationship.
So who was she?
Walter thinks that she was a shape-changing soldier from another universe. He thinks that might be where you went. Do you think it's a bad sign that I can say that out loud and neither one of us thinks I'm crazy?
She thought I knew where something was hidden.
No matter what happened to you and no matter where you went, Walter will figure it out. Lydia, I need to ask you something.
Sure.
Naine calitero anthropo apoton potero tu. You said that to me. Just after you woke up. Do you remember it?
No. Latin?
Mm-mm. Greek.
My mother used to say that to me every night before I went to bed.
There really isn't a point where things just can't get weirder, is there? What does it mean?
It means be a better man than your father. Walter was already gone. It was like a code between my mother and me. And then keep your people close. Take care of the people you care about.
Well, you're good at that.
It's good to see you again, Olivia Dunham.
It's good to see you too.
It's time to check your vitals.
You should get some rest.
Peter? Is it true that they're shutting us down?
No.
And with that, Peter goes and they have a birthday party for Peter. And, of course, they put a hat on Gene the cow. And Peter meets with Broyles, and he hands him the broken device that they found on the shape changer. And I'm going to play that clip. And, again, this helps to set up what, you know, season two, you know, kind of the drive, which is that they need to be more on the offensive now. And I think, you know, I think that everything works so good in this episode. I mean, to me, the biggest part of this episode is the fact that this group has gone from being, you know, on the defensive, being reactive, to being proactive and, you know, trying to take the fight to the bad guys. And obviously a lot of things have interconnected here. And I think that, with Olivia almost dying, it really has exasperated Peter, and he's just in every, you know, so many episodes, Peter takes a big step further and further into this organization, as opposed to being the kind of guy who wants to cut and run. And I think a lot of that, as we watch the show, at least my opinion is that the reason that that is because he's spending time with his father, getting to know him, and they're becoming a family in a lot of ways, but because he's becoming, you know, part of Walter's life, and this is Walter's life. And so therefore, any way you look at it, Peter wants to be part of that. And I think that's, you know, and he also wants to do the right thing. I mean, Peter's a decent guy. It's not that, you know, he's a bad man. He just, he just had some sketchy past. That's all. Anyway, let me play this clip.
Agent Broyles.
Mr. Bishop.
At the bar. You said they needed to see results.
Yeah.
Walter says this tech isn't from here, and that it's broken, but it is proof. And if they can fix it, they can have an army who can look like anyone they want them to. You tell them you can get this tech and they can have it, but they are not shutting us down. From now on, we're calling the shots. We're done reacting. We're not going to be too late anymore. After all, somebody's got to save their asses, right?
You surprised me, Mr. Bishop.
Thanks.
I love that music at the end there. That's all the clips I have for you. I think it's been a great episode. Now, there is one other thing you need to know, because this is a big, big deal. The very end of this episode, you know, we're all said and done. You know, we see Peter enjoying his birthday party, or at least Walter enjoying Peter's birthday party. We see Olivia taking her gun and confidently loading it and slapping the clip into place and, you know, pulling back the slide, and, you know, she's ready to go, you know, at least as far as we know. You know, it's very, this is very much a first chapter to season two. I mean, everything about it sets everything up, you know, and the final thing that we see is Charlie Francis down in the basement of the hospital, where there's an incinerator and he's pushing this cart, and we realize that Charlie Francis is pushing the body of Charlie Francis in the cart, and he burns the body up, and therefore the shapeshifter has taken on the appearance of Charlie Francis. And that's going to be more interesting as the episodes go on in season two. There's also a great, I talked a bit about this before. There's a great bit in season two with Charlie Francis trying to fight, you know, the change. And it's just a really good acting on his part. I really enjoyed that, you know, what they did there. The glyphs spell out tower. And I don't have a screenshot because I thought this one was kind of easy. But I will tell you, so you're going to have to listen to the episode to know if you cannot find it. We do see the observer walking in front of the car crash, you know, the wrecked car, and towards the beginning of it. So there's that. Anyway. the name of the episode was A New Day in the Old Town. And this is episode one of season two. I hope that you all are still on the ball with this. You know, Netflix is now streaming this. You know, first only Amazon had it, but now Netflix has it as well. And I know actually a few people who have gotten caught up in it. And it just gets better and better and better. And like I said, every season is a bit of everything kind of changes a little bit, you know. It's, you know, for those fans out there who have watched Chuck, it reminds me a lot of that, the way that Chuck did that. You know, I enjoyed Chuck, and every time you get to an end of a season, you're like, well, what are they going to do? You know, are they going to keep on the same thing for all these seasons? Because that's going to get kind of tired. But they haven't. Every season, they kind of reinvent themselves and made the show work very well. Anyway, that's it for A New Day in the Old Town. Hey, that's it. And as always, you can reach me at scifidig@gmail.com. If you go to scifidig.com, you have all the ways to connect with the community. Also, there's a comment line. Nobody ever uses the comment line, but there is a comment line. And, you know, we have a Google group, a Facebook group. You can follow me on Twitter. We have forums, all kind of things out there to stay in touch and be a part of the community. And until next time, this is Aaron for the Sci-Fi Dig podcast. Over and out. We'll